Yeah, well, that's where I'm living, I think. Whatever the hell America is any longer. Jeff Bennett here on this Thursday, 23rd day of February. Sorry that I've not been here the last couple of days. It's been, shall we say, insane. It's not been health-related issues. It's been pure insanity. Glad to be back. It's been kind of a mess. I've had more stuff planned programming-wise this week, and one damn thing after another just shut me down. Crazy. But we're back now, for today anyway, and then, of course, I won't be back until Tuesday, as Maggie Rose will be in tomorrow. And Michael, what are we doing about Maggie Rose? Keep your eyes open. Do something. It's crazy. Typically we'll do economic stuff on Tuesday, Wednesday, health-related stuff. We've had to do some reruns last couple of days. Today's going to be kind of a mixed bag, a little bit of economic updates and some things like that. Very interesting piece that came by me, and a very unusual piece that we're going to kind of share with you a little bit later in the program. That in some respects deals with history, deals with some of the insanity that we're witnessing in this country. And it seems to get worse by the day. Insanity. Let's take a look at some quick economic things, and we'll move on. Just some headlines, stuff that we've got posted over at Sierra Madre. I'm literally a full week behind major updates and stuff on websites, conversions that I have to get on, and I have just had no time. I got to be out of here at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning to get a car in for some recalls, hopefully some other service work for this car that is a car my wife and I have just recently acquired, the used car. And through a total fluke, and we weren't looking to do anything, but she's got a car that was a 2016 that had 98,000 miles on it. And I was in getting some service work done to my other car. And I had some time to kill, and I was walking around the lot and saw something that is quite interesting. A car a year older than my wife's car. Only had 38,000 miles on it. An amazingly well cared for car, one owner, et cetera, et cetera. And we wound up buying it. And it was not the game plan, but we did it. And we've got a couple of issues, recalls. And although I drove it extensively on a test drive, there were some things that I had not noticed. And frankly, there's no way you could have missed it if it were there. Some vibrating, some rattling, things of that nature. I'm going to get to take a look at, and hopefully they're going to take care of it. Good. Go run for a few minutes. Be back pretty quick. Oh, good Lord, good Lord. Well, some interesting things. And none of it's to be, a surprise. Average 401k balances have dropped 20% last year, including, except for one problem. 39% of Americans had been increasing their contributions. And why is all of that? Because stocks suffered one of the worst years ever, and inflation soared last year. Average 401k balance plunged by 20% last year, despite many Americans increasing those contributions. Report by Vanguard, one of the world's largest investment companies, reveals that its average customer account balance was $112,572 at the end of last year, down about one-fifth from the previous year. Quite interesting. As many of you know, over the years, I have specialized in precious metals IRAs. And I don't talk about it a lot these days for a combination of reasons. I've got several clients who have reached a point that they want to cash out. They want to liquidate. In some cases, take possession of the gold and or silver. Although what I'm running into now is people wanting to cash out and get the cash, period. And I had a gentleman call today I've not spoken with in quite some years. I was in the car. I was on the road. I told him I'd get back with him. It's been a nonstop, insane day. And so if he happens to be out there listening tonight, I will get with you tomorrow. Maybe I'll give you a quick call after I get off the air tonight to see what happens. So, okay, so we talk about this business about, you know, inflation and the cost of living and what's happening in the 401. So now we take a look and realize that, well, the inflation slowed again to 6.4% from 6.5% a month earlier. Whoopee-doo. Food and energy prices remain stubbornly high. Experts say the Fed still has more to do. From January of 2022 through January of this year, groceries are up 11.3%, rent 8.6%, gasoline another 1.5%. It's gone up again. Airline fares are up over 25.6% in the last year. Cost of new vehicles up 5.8%. Now, according to what I'm looking at here, it says used vehicle costs have dropped 11.6%. That's all reversed. They're on the way back up again. Although the car that we bought, we really lucked out. I got a very good price on it. Electricity up nearly 12% in the last year. Annual inflation rate slowed? Yeah, BS. How can it be slowing when all these costs are going up? Something doesn't make sense. A interesting side note that has nothing to do with economics directly. Interesting historical piece that we posted on Sierra Madre the other night. A piece called On the Trail for Nazi Gold. Intrepid treasure hunters journey through Poland to uncover Hitler's lost bullion. Secret tunnels to forgotten palaces. Fantastical tales of Nazi gold have long gripped the nation. Intriguing yarns of mystery, mayhem, even murder. A guy named Ed White, kind of like stepping into the pages of a real-life boy's own adventure novel. Despite no gold being found anywhere, after 8 years of covering every twist and turn, he says the surprises along the way were worth more than their weight in gold. He said, I'd never considered myself an Indiana Jones type before, more a male equivalent of Bridget Jones. But then he met a man called Mr. Bozek, an affable, ruddy-cheeked gentleman who belonged to a collective of amateur detectorists called the Salesian Research Group. Interesting to go read it. I like the history. It's kind of unique. Question, is the government about to create a massive debt crisis? Oh, my goodness. It just keeps coming around. Because no political entity can defy the laws of economics. Even the United States government, which many experts believe is exceptional, has its limits to what it can do economically speaking. A report, once again by Vanguard, one of the world's largest investment companies, as we just shared, revealed the average customer 401k account balance was down one-fifth from the previous year. But throughout 2022, 39% of these customers increased their deferral rate. You know, that's the amount of their paycheck which has moved into their 401k, so they don't have to pay taxes now. And this story just keeps coming back and around and around and around. And yet, while all this goes on, government spending continues to increase. And that spending hurts the economy. For years, writers on public finance have been searching for the neutral tax for that system of taxes which could keep the free market intact. And the object of that search was altogether chimerical. For example, Economists have often sought uniformity of taxes so that each person, or at least each person in the same income bracket, paid the same amount of tax. But this is inherently impossible. We've already seen from Calhoun's demonstration the community is inevitably divided into taxpayers and tax consumers, who, of course, cannot be said to pay taxes at all. To repeat the keen analysis of Calhoun, nor can it be otherwise, unless what is collected from each individual in the shape of taxes shall be returned to him in disbursements, which would make the process nugatory and absurd. You see, in short, government bureau rats do not pay taxes. They consume the tax proceeds. If a private citizen earning $10,000 income pays $2,000 in taxes, then the bureau rat earning $10,000 does not really pay $2,000 in taxes also. That he supposedly does is simply a bookkeeping fiction. He's actually acquiring an income of $8,000 and paying no taxes at all. Think about it. Government employees. Government scumbuckets. Government. I'll be nice. And on top of all this, half the world's to dump U.S. dollars in the future. And when that happens, it's going to cause a tsunami of inflation. It's going to cause asset price collapse, paving the way for CBDCs and this thing we keep hearing about called the Great Reset. And as the world moves away from the U.S. dollar as a world reserve asset, dollars will be dumped globally, causing a tsunami of inflation in the United States as the currency returns to American shores. Interest rates will rise accordingly, followed by a collapse in asset prices, which will all be used to usher in central bank digital currencies and the Great Reset. You see, my friends, this dire scenario is the forecast of one Andy Schechtman, president and owner of Miles Franklin, an expert on monetary and economic history. And Schechtman, who has three decades of experience in the precious metals sector, said that the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa coalition, could lead the charge to develop their own reserve currency, which will compete against the U.S. dollar. But the BRICS are, I think, coalescing against the dollar, the perceived hypocrisy, the hegemony of the dollar. We've already been told that the BRICS currency would be pegged to gold or to commodities, the assumption being that gold is one of those commodities, as I'm sure it well should be, given it's one of the oldest economic commodities in history. But then we start looking at crypto. Last week, Senate bank hearing. Crypto was on tap that day. Two of the three witnesses are going to push, shall we call it, nutty ideas. Because we all need to understand that to understand the deteriorating condition of American democracy, one needs to be able to spot corrupt patterns. And we should consider the Senate Banking Committee, for example. It's been previously explained how the Senate Banking Committee has subpoena power to get at the truth, but it never uses it. No, it relies on Senator Elizabeth Warren to send out an endless stream of letters demanding information, which typically never comes because the target of those letters knows that a failure to respond will not result in a subpoena. And the failure of the Senate Banking Committee to issue subpoenas stems from the fact that, according to the Congressional Research Service, the Senate Banking Committee has adopted a rule that requires a majority vote to issue a subpoena for documents or witnesses. And it continues to fail. You see, they're all in this deal together. Right? And yet with all of this, the economic nightmare that we've been sitting around waiting for is here. You see, a lot of people out there have been waiting for this next major economic crisis to arrive. If you're one of them, don't have to wait much longer, because it is here. All the numbers are telling us that we haven't faced a downturn of this magnitude since 08. For example, the Conference Board's index of leading economic indicators has now fallen for 10 months in a row. And according to Zero Hedge, this is the first time that this has happened since the collapse of Lehman Brothers. And just like we witnessed in 2008, the housing market is crashing. In fact, the median price of a home in San Francisco Bay Area has already fallen by a whopping 35%. And it's falling in my community as well, but not as rapidly as one would expect. Why in the world has this thing popped up? This is something new that my marvelous website has decided to add every time I post something now. It drives me insane. It's called About the Administration. Please allow me to introduce myself. Blah, 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 blah. Who cares? You don't need to read that every damn time that this thing pops up. Come on, come on, come on. Back up, back up. Why does this thing does not want to back up? Just hang on. I want to find out why it doesn't want to back up. It's the insanity of continual changes in these stupid website things. So why this thing keeps popping up. There's no need for this. It doesn't belong here. Is it down at the bottom? No, it's not. Only when I hit continue to full article. Then it opens it up. Okay, now let's move on to a different direction. Something interesting came my way the other day. I chose to give it a strange title when I posted it. And my title was The POS Continues to Sell Out the Nation. You know what POS stands for, don't you? I assume you do. The IRS is developing a new Biden-backed algorithm. It's going to see more white and Asian people targeted for tax audits. Now, why do they want to do that? Oh, they want to boost racial equity. Yeah. A conservative legal group is accusing the Biden administration of directing the Internal Revenue Service to audit more white and Asian Americans in an effort to boost equity. The America First Legal Foundation, that's a nonprofit that seeks to fight executive overreach, has filed a Freedom of Information Act request last Tuesday, claiming that an executive order under Biden signed the previous week encourages the IRS to alter its algorithms to audit more white and Asian taxpayers. Well, let's audit fewer black taxpayers, right? Well, though this executive order on further advancing racial equity and support for underserved communities to the federal government, that's the entire title of the report. It's insane. Goes on to say that that this order does not specifically mention audits. It does direct federal agencies, including the IRS, to find ways to make their practices more equitable to underserved communities. Maybe some of these communities are underserved because many of them don't work. They're not paying taxes anyway. They're on the government dole. But let's see. So specifically, the order directs agencies to prevent and remedy discrimination, including by protecting the public from algorithmic discrimination. Who comes up with these frickin' words anyway? Algorithmic. Wasn't he a vice president at one time under Bill Clinton? No, yeah, he was. Who cares? So America's First Legal Foundation is now investigating how these things could affect the IRS, seeking internal documents from the agency referring to its efforts to improve equity amongst Americans. Under federal law, the Treasury Department now has just 20 business days to respond to the request. That means they're running out of time. Equity refers to an equality in outcome, rather than equality of opportunities, of course. It's become a woke buzzword over the past few years, one that Joey has championed since he took office in 2021. Supporters say it's important to recognize that some minority groups may need extra help to achieve their potential. Critics say equity policies are often used in an unfair and sometimes even racist way. Oh my goodness gracious. Well, almost immediately after he was sworn in, Biden signed an executive order that, quote, emphasized the enormous human cost of systemic racism and persistent poverty, and provided a powerful and unprecedented mandate for all federal agencies to launch a whole-of-government approach to equity. That, according to the recent White House press release. And in response, the Department of Treasury established the Treasury Advisory Committee on Racial Equity, which provides the agency with recommendations on how to advance racial equity, particularly aspects of the domestic economy that have directly and indirectly resulted in unfavorable conditions for communities of color. How is it created unfavorable conditions for communities of color? So many of these communities of color are living off the government dole, the taxpayers' dole. It's sickening to me, the way things are written to play head games. Well, back in the day, Biden then, of course, expanded on the executive order recently, last week, by issuing another order that required all federal agencies to implement policies that promote racial equality, equity. It says that each agency head shall support ongoing implementation of a comprehensive equity strategy that uses the agency's policy, budgetary, programmatic, service delivery, procurement, data collection, process, grant making, public engagement, research and evaluation. Joey couldn't write all these words. He's too damn brain dead. But it goes on and on. They want to be able to enable the agency's mission, service delivery, to yield equitable incomes or outcomes for all Americans, including underserved communities. Oh, God. Most of the people that they're trying to do this stuff for wouldn't understand the meaning of the words. It's just another excuse to try to suck votes out of people, thinking that the government's going to do more for them than they've been doing for other people. These executive orders don't explicitly say that the IRS should alter their algorithms to reduce the number of black households that are audited, but it does say it should prevent and remedy discrimination, including by protecting the public from algorithmic discrimination. A recent study from Stanford University found that black taxpayers are audited 2.9 to 4.7 times the rate of non-black taxpayers in the United States under the IRS National Research Program, which randomly selects tax returns for audit. They need to get the numbers together because that's not completely accurate in the way they're reporting it. So now the America First Legal Foundation argues that Biden's new directive could encourage the IRS to change that algorithm to underemphasize black households and businesses, overemphasize white and Asian and mixed race homes and businesses instead. The organization cites other actions taken by the administration, saying that since Biden took office, the Treasury Department has been using racial equity as a key factor in the design of tax compliance and illegally examining the tax system through a racial equity lens. Who dreams up all of this crap? But the Treasury report's statement or report states that statements by Deputy Secretary of Treasury Wally Adeyemo, Assistant Secretary for Tax Policy Lily Batchelder, and members of the Treasury Advisory Committee on Racial Equity demonstrate that the Treasury Department is committed to imputing race and ethnicity into tax data for the purpose of ensuring that more white, Asian, and mixed-race Americans are audited based solely on their race or national origin. Consequently, there's a very strong reason to believe that the Treasury Department is altering the IRS audit algorithms to illegally operationalize racial quotas or requiring agents to use imputed race and ethnicity data to ensure racial equity. It never ends. It just never ends, people. And I could go on with it, but come on, enough is enough. Treasury Department, of course, has been reached out for comment over this whole nonsense. Stephen Miller, the president of the group, states that we will not allow the machinery of the federal government with all its considerable and awesome powers to be used to categorize and punish Americans based on skin color. We want to replace our entire constitutional order with race and gender-based Marxism. It never ends. And the move of all this nonsense comes as members of Congress debate whether to confirm Danny Werfel to head the IRS. Oh, he vowed not to expand tax audits on businesses and households making less than $400,000 a year when he was being questioned by the Senate Finance Committee a week and a half ago. He said he would be unyielding in following his true north to increase public trust. Well, this guy looks like a little bit like a scumbag, greaseball. I don't know. Who's this guy? Man, all these people look like scumbuckets. Well, if the IRS is involved and our government's involved, all this nonsense, you can guarantee that they are scumbuckets. The scumbuckets want to get into our pockets. I'm tired of the jive. Tired of the jive. Aren't you? We should be. Now, let's get away from economics for a while. Matter of fact, let's get away from economics for the rest of the program. Something interesting came before me today. It makes me think back to another time in my life. I began to look back to the 1960s. I look at some of the people who were involved with anti-war Vietnam War movement. I look back at some of those who were involved with, shall we say, racist-related issues. And there's a name that came about. It's a name that I have never forgotten. Angela Davis, Black Panther communist, woman who has spent her entire life teaching the U.S. was built by racist colonizers, someone whose face calls to pay reparations. But something in her genealogy shows something a little bit different in her life. Something a little bit different in her history than has ever come about before. And two nights ago, she appeared on PBS's Finding Your Roots in an episode that aired this week. Angela Davis, famed Black Panther, communist, his face calls to pay reparations. Why? Because she's recently discovered that her ancestors were white Puritans who arrived in the United States on the Mayflower. Angela Davis is now 79, just a couple of years older than I am. I'll be 75 in two more days. Davis is flabbergasted. She has recently discovered that both sides of her family were white. Her mother's ancestors were slave owners. She was a guest on the PBS show Finding Your Roots. And the stunning revelation sparked calls for the famously woke Marxist University of California professor to herself pay reparations, having previously called on whites to pony up. So she begins to share a tweet about the show. Conservative pundit Matt Walsh writes that her story gets better. She's also descended from a slave owner. And on her father's side is a pilgrim. On her mother's side was a slave owner. Looks like Angela Davis owes some reparations. Another Twitter user called AKA Camaro wrote, Angela Davis, the radical Marxist and former Black Panther, recently discovered she's also the ancestor of colonizers and slave owners. I guess she owes herself reparations. The timeline is hilarious. It's quite amazing. Angela Davis' ancestors arrived in America on the Mayflower. It's unreal. How does she respond to stuff like this? How? We know that Davis became nationally known in 1970. Guns she owned were used in the holding up of a Marin County courtroom in California, which left four dead, including the judge. And after the FBI issued a warrant for her arrest, she went on the run, became listed as one of the department's 10 most wanted. And after her eventual arrest, she spent 16 months in jail before being found not guilty. Davis, born in Birmingham, Alabama, 1944, during an era of segregation, violent racial division in the South. And while studying in West Germany in her youth, she was drawn to far-left politics, and upon returning to the U.S. became involved with the Black Panthers and the Communist Party USA. And in this television interview, she appeared shocked, in which Finding Your Roots host Henry Louis Gates Jr. told her of her ancestry. No, I cannot believe this, she said. My ancestors did not come here in the Mayflower, only to be later told that they did indeed arrive in the U.S. aboard the famed Pilgrim ship. You see, the Mayflower, for those of you who don't remember, was an English boat that brought white English families known as the Pilgrims to the American continent to permanently establish the New England colony in 1620. Gates continued to tell that you are descended from the 101 people who sailed on the Mayflower. Now, Gates is the director of the Hutchins Center for African American Research at Harvard University. The one-hour show in which public figures learn of their ancestry outlined how William Brewster, who traveled aboard the boat with his wife Mary Wentworth Brewster, was Davis's 10th great-grandfather. Mary was one of only five adult women from the Mayflower to have survived the first winter after arriving in the U.S., and one of only four such to survive until the first Thanksgiving in 1621, in which she is said to have helped cook. And this revelation caused many to point out the complexity of ancestry, and on social media, some suggested that by some logic, Davis should pay black reparations. You see, the concept of reparations, an idea which she has endorsed in the past, is that people with ancestors who were enslaved should be financially reimbursed by those whose ancestors enslaved them. All of this vividly illustrates the absurdity of reparations as a concept, among other things, said one person on Twitter in response to a clip of the revelation. before any talk about reparations, everybody needs to take the ancestry DNA test. I think a lot of people would be shocked to discover who they were descended from, said another. It's profound. Absolutely profound. Davis, by the way, also made discoveries about her mother, Sally Bell, who was found to be the daughter of a successful white Alabama lawyer who himself descended from a slave owner. Now, Bell was a school teacher, grew up in a foster home, never knowing either of her biological parents. Her mother had genetics that traced back to Africa, but her father was John Austin Darden, who was also involved in politics. Born in Rockford, Coosa, Alabama in 1879. He has my mother's lips, Davis said, as she was presented a photo of her grandfather. I cannot get used to the fact that this is my mother's father. Then there's a clipping from an old Alabama newspaper which shone light on who Darden had been. A former publisher of the Goodwater Enterprise, who served as both a representative and a senator at various times, from 1914 to 1933, had practiced law here for 40 years. Was he a member of the KKK or the White Citizens Council? Davis asked. That's something I'd want to know, because in those days, in order to achieve the power, one had to thoroughly embrace white supremacy. And she said, I'm both glad and I'm angry. I'm really, really angry, she added. If you look at some of the pictures and the images of her family and her ancestors, profound. Well, as Gates went back further in time, for Angela, things became even murkier. Stephen Darden, her fourth great-grandfather, was born in Colonial Virginia around 1750. He was a patriot who played the drums during the Revolutionary War, according to a muster roll. Afterwards, he moved from Virginia to Georgia, where he owned a farm and at least six slaves. She said, I always imagined my ancestors as the people who were enslaved. My mind and my heart are swirling with all of these contradictory emotions, she said. But I'm glad, on the one hand, we've begun to solve this mystery. We have something we didn't have before. But at the same time, she said, I think it makes me even more committed to struggling for a better world. This world that could give rise to such a beautiful person as my mother was not the world I want to see in the future. And Davis's father, Benjamin Frank Davis, grew up in Linden, Alabama. His mother was Molly Spencer. And similarly, nothing was known about his father. Alabama census records indicated that for at least 10 years, Molly lived next door to a white man named Murphy Jones. Records stated that he sold her 2 acres of land for $200 and that the two were likely relatively close. And using genetic profiles of Murphy's known living relatives, researchers found multiple matches to Angela, indicating that Jones was her grandfather. Molly Spencer's father was named Isom Spencer, listed as collateral on a loan document filed by a slave owner named William K. Pauling, who owned a plantation in Marengo, Alabama. Angela said, I assumed that my ancestors lived on plantation as slaves, but of course, I did not know who they were. I didn't know who the slave owners were. And it transpired that Islam was a remarkable figure who marked the transition of her family from enslaved to free. Court records of uncovered by PBS showed that he even brought a complaint against the slaver over his nephews who were being held in the plantation under so-called apprenticeships. She said, I'm happy to find there's a motif of resistance there, because this is what I feel I've been trying to do since I was a teenager. Those were Angela Davis's closing words, reflecting on her grandfather's struggle. It is so interesting to delve into history, I think, and begin to learn some of these kind of things. It is quite fascinating. things aren't always what they seem to be, is it? Or are they? Simply amazing. Ah, my goodness gracious. When do things change? Why do we have to go back 200 years, 150 years, and try to make up for the things that none of us caused? Things that so many of us have, I'm not going to say tried to overlook, because that's not what I meant here. I never had a problem with a person of color, a black person, a brown person, until probably when I was in Vietnam. By this time, I'd already spent almost 2.5 years in the military. Didn't really have problems dealing with black people, drinking with them, enjoying time with them, etc., etc., etc. And that there were some that I was stationed in Vietnam with that were very racist. Very racist. It's simply amazing to me. Simply amazing. So we're still trying to convert the world as we live in today based upon the hate, the anger, the frustrations of things in our past that none of us had a damn thing to do with. And in many cases, neither did any of our family members. It's appalling. Simply appalling. Is this stupid thing ever going to recycle? I just flipped a screen over and God, it's slower than molasses. Ugh. Hot tamale, but horrible photos. Unbelievable. Nah, we'll bail out of that one. Let's take a quick look at some of the other things going on. This past week has been very unusual for me. A couple things I want you to take a look at if you've got time. A piece that I came across some days ago called "The Child Shall Lead Us." Well, that wasn't the entire title. The title was "Might Our Storm Clouds Be Parting." A child shall lead. A couple of weeks ago, students at a small Christian college in Kentucky gathered for their regular Wednesday chapel service. 10 days afterwards, it had still not ended. And people from around the country and the world continue to join in, no matter your religion or lack thereof. This is an exceptional happening. More exceptional even is that this spirit has spread to other colleges and universities. This is a profound piece to read. I published it. It was sent to me by its author, Kay Stansel. And it became profound to read because of its spiritual nature. A child shall lead. A young man on a regular weekly gathering at the chapel of Asbury College in Wilmore, Kentucky, stood up, began to speak about what was going on with him, the mistakes that he had made, where he thought he'd gone wrong. And the young man poured out his soul. And according to others in attendance, there was nothing terribly catching about his words. But his words held enough power somehow to ignite a movement, a revival, a marathon church service, in the words of Tucker Carlson, among many around the world. There have been confessions, singing, praying, dancing, and support from one participant to another in a continuous flow. Social media has drawn many of them together. And after the young man finished, more and more stood to say their piece and feel their peace. And the service continued all through the day and the night. And people began to show up on campus in Wilmore, Kentucky, a quiet little country town 20 miles southwest of Lexington. And at some point, they were coming from all 50 states and several foreign countries, including Brazil, Indonesia. More spaces had to be opened up. The gymnasium was pressed into service. 10 days after this thing began, it was still going on. But the strength of spirit had overflowed from Asbury to other Christian colleges, Lee College in Cleveland, Tennessee, Ohio Christian University, Circleville, Ohio, Campbellsville University with 7 locations throughout Kentucky, and a graduate school for marriage and family therapy in Encino, California. No, this is not the first time that this has happened at this tiny little college in Kentucky. And to realize all this is to be even more amazed by the power of the Spirit. In 1970, as the hippie, free love, glorious Steinem years were going full steam, a spontaneous revival began in Asbury and lasted over a week. And some of the 2023 attendees were there then. Young people of the 1970s were feeling as off course as they do today. Their societal norms were being shattered, their moral guideposts challenged with hatred and division, just like we see today. And today's Gen X is too suffering, head-spinning changes in their world, many of which show the direct face of evil. These shocks to normalcy are coming even faster and more severely today than 50 years ago because they're being forcefully and openly installed by a rogue government. No, we didn't get tagged by generation alphabetology back then. But we were at the beginning of the boomers being told to question everything and leave nothing the same. From attitude to attire, everything was changing suddenly, not for the better. How different is that from today? Truly, it was just a part of the same Marxian continuum we see today. The youth of today are ground zero of life's rapid slide into the dark. And they sense it. They have their whole lives ahead. Or do they? Asbury's student body president believes that a young army of believers is rising to claim Christianity for its own. School's director of communication says she believes that students are desperate for something other than what the world is giving them. And many students who've attended the gathering say they're experiencing a release of inner darkness. Oh, would that this might happen for all of us, my friends. Asbury College has 1,639 students from 40 states, 31 foreign countries, who are taught by a faculty of scholars, 75% of whom hold the top degrees in their fields. There are 4 master's programs. It's just a good small college in the middle of the country. Nothing at all special about it at a cursory glance. And yet, as of this writing last week, this spirit of revival, or is it a revival of the spirit, was still growing. At the time of this writing, it was 10 days and counting. We pray that this is just the start of something biblically huge, that our dark clouds of evil are beginning to part. And why is Kay Stansel telling us all this? Because maybe you've heard about this on the evening news if you listen to one of the more conservative outlets. First, Kay wanted to just share some good news because Lord knows we all need some. And then it struck her that the Lord does know and would like this to be shared in other ways than social media, because I think he wants to get this around to all of every age, everywhere. What became interesting to me, my friends, is that I sent this out to a group of my friends, people my wife and I have traveled with, all of whom are very spiritually involved. I'm the one oddball that none of them can figure out because I don't advertise. I just exist. I live. I do what needs to be done. And when I sent this around to all of these people, I heard back from one couple, people that I know very, very well. They were so deeply involved spiritually. And they thanked me for sending it out. And they had been aware of this movement from the day it began. There's something going on, folks. I hope it's something so damn positive. I strongly invite you to go to, and I'm blanking, what website did I just tell you I had this thing on? Oh my God. Come on. I think I've got this posted at metropolis.cafe. I do. Might our storm clouds be parting? The child shall lead. Strongly urge you to read it, share it, and while you're there, take a good strong look at the article underneath it entitled Take Charge of Your Children's Education. It's time we do these things instead of letting someone else do it for us. Time for us to go. Thanks for joining me with this very mixed program tonight. You take care of yourselves. Lord willing, I'll see you next week and be back on track. I certainly hope so because I'm burnt out. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett. Good night. These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now. These are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past. Hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses, the rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak of. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should only pray for time. Hand. Oh, we hold on to what you can. And charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door, say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take all my chances, say.
I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed, the human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love, Jesus has so much to hate. Hanging on to a wall, there is no hope to speak out. In the wounded skies above, say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.